headlines, Iran slams the U.S. government for its move to seize 36 websites belonging to Iranian and regional news networks, including Press TV. Media reports say four members of the death squad that murdered Saudi journalist Jamal Khashoggi had been trained in the United States. And Beijing calls the U.S. the greatest creator of risks for regional security after an American warship sailed through a waterway that separates Taiwan from China. Hello and welcome everybody here in the Iranian capital, Tehran. This is World News. Our top story for this half hour, Iran says the U.S. move to seize three dozen websites belonging to Iranian and regional news outlets is against freedom of speech.
The latest measure by the U.S. is against the same principles of free speech, which the country has always been proud of. That means curtailing free speech. The measure means that the U.S. is using tools to prevent the reflection of different viewpoints to the public. The Iranian government condemns this measure.
Vaizi said Iran will use all legal and international means to follow up the case. He also said Washington's move is unconstructive for the ongoing talks on the revival of the Iran nuclear deal. Communication Minister Mohammad Javad Azadi Jahromi denounced the move as a violation of international law. On Tuesday, the U.S. government seized 33 websites, including Iran's Press TV and Al Alam news channels, three websites linked to Iraq's popular mobilization units, and Yemen's Al Masira TV channel were targeted too. A statement cites U.S. sanctions laws for the seizure. Press TV has been monitoring social media platforms to see people's reaction to the U.S. government's seizure of multiple websites belonging to Iranian and regional news outlets. Let's see what they had to say on the matter.
The U.S. has seized multiple news websites associated with other countries. This sets a horrifying precedent in which the U.S. shuts down the flow of information except for U.S.-approved propaganda.
U.S. democracy in action. Censoring Iranian journalism. Does it bother EU High Representative Joseph Borrell or the European Parliament that they unconditionally support the U.S., who are found by the Alliance of Democracies Foundation to be the world's biggest threat to democracy?
Between shutting down Iran's media websites and a few weeks stealing and selling off $100 million of its crude oil, it is clear that the Biden regime will take what they want from Iran by force. These are not actions of good faith negotiators.
I think highly of Iran and agree that the U.S. regime is authoritarian. Seizing Iranian and pro-resistance websites exposes the U.S. as opposing freedom and again proves that the U.S. weaponizes the internet. Western media and elites don't condemn this because they support silencing dissent.
Washington is currently stealing and blocking many Iranian websites.
If the U.S. government is trying to silence you, you're probably doing something right. It's still extremely egregious and an affront on the press, but I'm going to take it as a badge of honor.
How is this possible, and what precedents are set?
One reason why the U.S. regime just seized Press TV's website. Press TV seems to be the only English-language international network giving heavy attention to global protests and action against Israel's assault on Gaza, from New York City to Rome to Islamabad, and giving protesters extended time to express themselves.
Well, security sources in Iran say the country has foiled a sabotage attempt on one of the buildings of its atomic energy organization. The sources said the attempt took place in the early hours of Wednesday. They said the attempt was foiled before causing any casualties or damage. No further details are available for now. The same sources said an investigation has been launched into the incident. Four of the Saudi operatives who participated in the 2018 killing of dissident journalist Jamal Khashoggi had received paramilitary training in the U.S. That's what a leading American daily says, according to the New York Times. The U.S. State Department approved the training. It was provided by a private security company in the state of Arkansas. The firm had previously confirmed its role in the training of the several members of the Khashoggi kill team. The State Department says it cannot legally comment on what it has referred to as licensed defense expert activities. Khashoggi was killed in the Turkish city of Istanbul on October 2, 2018, after he entered the Saudi consulate there. U.S. intelligence reports have said Saudi Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman approved the murder. Israeli forces have demolished more Palestinian structures in the occupied West Bank. Palestinian media say that loaders accompanied by troops flattened buildings near the outpost of Benyamin. Last week, Israeli forces also leveled a house in the town of Beit Omer. The cases are the latest in Israel's long-running campaign of demolishing Palestinian homes and properties. The structures are destroyed usually under the pretext that they lack construction permits, but Palestinians say the demolitions are part of efforts by Israel to expand its settlements in the occupied territories. The regime has been expanding settler units in defiance of international law. Israeli settlers and forces have attacked Palestinian residents in the occupied East Jerusalem, its neighborhood of Sheikh Jarrah. Two Palestinians have been arrested as regime forces raided Palestinian homes. Since May, the Sheikh Jarrah neighborhood has become the focal point of tensions after the regime handed out eviction orders to several Palestinian families there. Clashes ensued with Israeli forces using heavy-handed tactics against Palestinian protesters in the occupied territories. Three Palestinian prisoners remain on hunger strike in an Israeli jail to protest their illegal detention without charge or trial under the so-called administrative detention. One of the hunger strikers has been transferred to hospital, but he insists to continue his strike until Israel releases him. Mona Kendil reports from Rome.
A number of Palestinian prisoners are going on with an open-ended hunger strike to protest their illegal imprisonment without charge or trial under Israel's so-called administrative detention. At least three prisoners insist to continue their strike despite their seriously deteriorating condition until Israel releases them. Among them is 28-year-old Ghadanfar Abu Atwan, who has started his hunger strike almost 50 days ago. After starting his strike, Israel's prison authorities placed him in isolation. Later, he was transferred to Kaplan Medical Center south of Tel Aviv because of his serious illness, and he's being held there under detention.
Of course, when all doors are shut down in the face of the prisoners to get rid of the administrative detention, they have few means to protest and they have to engage in the hunger strike battle, especially that many prisoners' terms are renewed for several times and this without charge or trial. When Ghadanfar started his protest, he was beaten and tortured by the Israeli jailers and he was held in solitary confinement.
Palestinians held a protest in solidarity with the prisoners outside the Red Cross Committee building in Ramallah. The oldest of those taking part is 59-year-old, a senior leader of the Hamas movement, Jamal al-Tawil, joined in protest over the detention of his daughter, journalist Bushra al-Tawil. He's demanding Israeli authorities to release him and his daughter. Israeli court had extended Bushra's previous administrative detention order last March. There is also Sheikh Khadr Adnan, prominent leader of the jihad movement, whom is staging his fifth hunger strike. This is the 12th time he has been detained.
Today we are here not only to stand by the prisoners and support them. This is the least we can do against the administrative detention policy. Israel arrests people from all walks of life and different political spectrum. We are in real need to launch a national and worldwide campaign to force Israel to stop this policy that exposes the Israeli authorities and their illegal practices.
The Palestinian Prisoners Society said the Israeli authorities have lately increased the use of administrative detention against Palestinians. The committee said Israeli authorities issued 200 administrative detention orders since the beginning of May. The majority of the hunger-striking prisoners are those who are held arbitrarily under Israel's policy of administrative detention. That's why they put their lives on the line to demand not only their freedom, but an end to the administrative detention policy. Mona Kandil, Occupied Ramallah.
Yemen has slammed as disgraceful the UN chief's decision to add the Ansarullah movement to a blacklist of groups for violating children's rights. Yemeni protesters, including children, have turned out in mass to condemn the UN move. They say the UN must instead turn its attention to addressing Saudi blockade and attacks that have taken a heavy toll on Yemeni civilians.
The United Nations has blacklisted Yemen's Ansarul Law, accusing it of violating children's rights. The move has drawn Yemen's ire. Yemen's political leadership has blamed the world body for its apathy towards the continued Saudi violations against the children of Yemen. Yemeni officials say the UN should play its role to lift the Saudi blockade on Yemenis that's killing children instead of blacklisting the Ansarul Law movement. Member of the Supreme Political Council, Mohammed al-Houthi, dismissed as baseless the UN accusation, saying it did not refer to an investigation on the ground as the movement had demanded. Meanwhile, Yemen's Minister of Information said the UN had turned a blind eye to the ongoing Saudi blockade and attacks on Yemenis, which have led to the death of tens of Yemeni children on a daily basis.
I think it's a political decision by the part of the United Nations. They're being faced with pressure from the United States, Britain, and France, who are making billions of dollars selling arms to Saudi Arabia and to the United Arab Emirates. And in addition, I think it may have been part of a concession for the re-election of the current Secretary General for the United Nations, who just was re-elected. So it's clearly political, it's not fair, and I guess it points to the fact that the United Nations is losing its utility and is becoming sort of a pawn in the part of the Western powers, in particular the United States.
Observers say the United Nations blacklisting of Ansarul Law has no relation to the humanitarian situation in Yemen. They believe that the UN must take real action against the Saudi blockade if it has real intentions to end the suffering of millions of Yemenis.
According to Yemen's health ministry, 80,000 people requiring urgent medical care abroad have died due to the Saudi blockade. The ministry data also suggests that every 5 minutes, a Yemeni child dies due to poverty and lack of access to proper medical equipment, all resulting from the Saudi blockade. And why has the UN blacklisted Yemen and not the Saudi-led coalition for violating children's rights?
Saudi Arabia and its allies launched a devastating war on Yemen in March 2015. The war has killed thousands of civilians, including women and children. Yemen is now dealing with what the United Nations has called the world's worst humanitarian crisis. The UN added the Saudi-led coalition to its blacklist of violators of children's rights in 2016, a move that was soon reversed by former UN Secretary General Ban Ki-moon. Ban Ki-moon said he delisted the coalition after he faced pressure from a number of Saudi Arabia's allies that threatened to cut crucial funding to many UN programs.
This was one of the most painful and difficult decisions I have had to make. The report describes horrors no child should have to face. At the same time, I also had to consider the very real prospect that millions of other children would suffer grievously if, as was suggested to me, countries would defund many UN programs.
The move drew angry reactions from human rights activists who said the UN Secretary General's office had hit a new low. Last year, the UN removed the coalition from its blacklist, citing a decline in the number of those killed and maimed in Yemen.
I would say that the Saudis and some of their rich allies would be threatening the United Nations to withdraw funding. Under Donald Trump, they did withdraw funding for the UN, and Biden has restored it, but I suspect that there was some hidden agenda on it that they still want to support Saudi Arabia, the United Arab Emirates, and don't like the fact that the Ansarul movement and the Shias in Yemen like to be independent and not be dictated to by the Saudis and indirectly by the United States and its allies.
The Saudi-led coalition's blockade and its war on Yemen continue to claim millions of innocent lives. The United Nations has a responsibility to help end people's suffering. Taking a one-sided approach to conflicts will never resolve them.
China has accused the U.S. of creating trouble in the Taiwan Strait after an American warship sailed through the sensitive waterway that separates Taiwan from China. China said the U.S. is intentionally playing the same old tricks and disrupting things in the Taiwan Strait. Beijing described Washington as the greatest security risk creator in the region. The U.S. Navy has confirmed the transit. It said the Tuesday sailing was a routine mission in accordance with international law The U.S. has stepped up such missions in the past months despite China's opposition. China considers Taiwan its own territory. It believes the American missions send a message of support to Taiwan that seeks independence. The Pentagon's top brass has voiced concern over legislation that would overhaul the U.S. military justice system for crimes like sexual assault. The legislation removes decisions about prosecuting sexual assault and other major crimes from the military chain of command. The bill turns such decisions over to trained prosecutors. Now, opponents say they acknowledge failings in the current process of addressing those issues. They reject the bill for various reasons. Some say it's too broad. Others cast doubt over the timeline for its implementation. U.S. Defense Secretary Lloyd Austin has backed overhauling the military justice system that has recently come under scrutiny. Last December, more than a dozen commanders and unit leaders were sacked over a series of murders and sex crimes at a major U.S. military base. A Democratic-backed piece of legislation on voting overhaul fails to advance through the U.S. Senate. The bill received 50 votes, all from the Democrats, but fell short of the 60 votes required to open a debate on the matter in the 100-member U.S. Senate. Democratic senators believe the legislation was necessary to protect and expand voting rights and counter state-level moves to restrict voters. The Republicans, however, described the bill as a power grab attempt by the federal government. Over a dozen Republican majority states have introduced laws that restrict absentee and in-mail voting. Former President Donald Trump refused to concede defeat, citing alleged voter fraud after the final results showed a record number of Americans had voted by mail. And that brings us to an end here on this edition of the World News. Do stay tuned, though. Bye.
What about you? IRIB English Radio. Log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
Inside Israel. Anti-Semitism has been widely used to slander all those who do not agree with Israel in whatever the case might be. But now, Israeli officials are being accused of anti-Semitism. New videos have been recently released by Israeli officials that actually mocks other Israelis and Jews in ways that can only be explained as anti-Semitic. The term has gained widespread popularity on an international level, mainly due to wide use, or some now say abuse, of the word by Israeli officials themselves to justify pretty much everything they do, from internal policy to external policy. But for Israeli officials, the term doesn't come any more handy than when others are criticizing them. When Israel is criticized, it automatically uses the anti-Semitic card to slander others. But what happens if the table is turned?
We've all heard of Israeli officials and the regime in general call anyone that points to their crimes against humanity, war crimes, and their dysfunctional system as anti-Semitic. But activists from the non-for-profit U.S.-based Electronic Intifada online newspaper have found that the Israeli regime in its nature is actually anti-Semitic. According to the Electronic Intifada, Israel's new ambassador to the U.K. stereotyped a Jewish human rights group in anti-Semitic terms in a video she released as part of a campaign for a political party. In a Hebrew YouTube video, Israeli Ambassador Zipi Hotoveli mocked breaking the silence as being motivated by money. The video depicts Jews as greedy. According to Jews worldwide, and of course Israel, depictions of Jews as being greedy is a major theme in the history of anti-Semitic stereotypes. Breaking the Silence, by the way, is an Israeli NGO established in 2004 by veterans of the Israel military and aims to shed light on the cruelty of the Israeli occupation in occupied Palestinian territories. The video also targets Israeli human rights groups B'Tselem, calling them extreme left, and accuses them of receiving funding from the European Union and being agents of the EU. The video calls on the extreme right to attack these organizations so that their funding will cease to exist.
Anti-Semitism is basically a system that is designed to suppress all forms of criticism of Israel, Jewish culture, Jewish religion, Jewish politics, or should I say, everything Jewish. Whether there is really hatred toward Jews for being Jews in the world, I actually hardly believe it. I think that a lot of people oppose Israel, and for a good reason, and it should be legitimate. A lot of people oppose some aspect of Jewish culture, aspect of Judaism, definitely aspects of Jewish politics, and all of that should be totally legitimized. As long as we don't hate people for being a people, I think that all criticism should be considered legitimate. I think that it is way more than Israel. The answer is obviously yes, but it's not just Israel. This is something that we see throughout the entire spectrum of Jewish politics, and it's not just Jewish politics. We can see that all over the world, politicians are weaponizing anti-Semitism in order to serve their own interests. We saw it in Britain in the case of Jeremy Corbyn. We saw it in the American election. Both sides accuse the other of anti-Semitism. And it's pretty, meaningless, because really you cannot find a single voice in the political arena, in the arts, in academia, who criticizes Jews for being Jews. Again, people criticize Jews legitimately for politics, for culture, for Israeli politics. You have to remind you that Israel calls itself the Jewish state and claims to represent world Jews. Whether it is true or not is another question.
On social media, the conversation took a different turn. On Twitter, Guy Blue says, well, anti-Israel doesn't necessarily mean anti-Semitic. Anak sarcastically says, people are calling B'Tselem anti-Semitic. At this point, anyone who criticizes Israel is anti-Semitic, even Israelis. CEO of Corn says, but it does feel a little strange that it can be considered anti-Semitic to criticize Israel, not Jews, but the Zionist portion of the regime, for genuine humanitarian crimes, or labeling American anti-Semitic fascist Nazis being considered insensitive.
shameful what Israel has done and the supporters of Israel have done in terms of false accusations of anti-Semitism. I say that it's dangerous because anti-Semitism is something that is very real, and it usually occurs in modern times within the context of a rise in Islamophobia, a rise in anti-Black hatred, a rise in anti-immigrant sentiment. So it's usually part of a larger rise of fascism in these modern times. And Israel has used accusations of anti-Semitism in order to protect themselves from criticism for their system of apartheid and their human rights abuses towards Palestinians. This takes place both from the state of Israel and from supporters of Israel, including pro-Israel lobby groups in the U.S. And what it does is it really confuses people as to what anti-Semitism is and as to the real dangers of anti-Semitism. I could say that the use of anti-Semitism has backfired against Jews around the world and against so many people who experience racism and xenophobia by falsely conflating anti-Semitism, a very real danger, with criticism, legitimate criticism of Israel's human rights abuses. We dilute the impact of calling out and combating anti-Semitism. And so defense of Israel by Israel as a state and by pro-Israel groups and individuals continues to create a real danger for Jews around the world and for our allies who we are working together with to secure safety for all people.
Zipi Hotavelli is the same person who back in 2019, during the British elections, accused then-Labour leader Jeremy Corbyn of anti-Semitism, calling him troubling and a real danger to Israel. This shows the double standards of Israel's principles and practice of hard-right Jewish ethno-nationalism are now simply the new normal in Israeli politics, according to the Institute for Jewish Policy Research, Anthony Lerman. For Israel and many of its officials, the only definition of anti-Semitism that matters is failure to support Israel. This isn't the first instance of Israeli officials and anti-Semitism. In 2017, Israeli-American multimillionaire and key Israel lobby donor Adam Milstein depicted liberal Jewish billionaire George Soros as an octopus with tentacles spanning the globe, practically identical to Nazi propaganda. In 2015, a regime-funded body representing Israeli settlers in the occupied West Bank released a video which depicted a Jewish-European conspiracy to fabricate war crimes against Israel. Many see Israel's actions as part of a growing trend to equate criticism of Israeli regime policies with anti-Semitism. Scholars from all over the world have noted that it is increasingly difficult to have a proper discussion about Zionism or a normal critical debate about Israel. Earlier this year, in Germany, a renowned scholar, Achille Mbembe, who is currently teaching at the University of the Witwatersrand in Johannesburg, was accused of racism and anti-Semitism by public figures and institutions because of his support of the BDS movement. BDS, that is Boycott, Divestment, Sanctions, is a Palestinian-led global movement for the freedom, justice, and equality of Palestinians. His case is just one of many.
Yes, completely legal and ethical. The state of Israel doesn't let to do these critics, but ethically it's completely good to say you are doing something wrong. You have to change this policy, as same as you can say to other states. There, the countries in the world they can make errors, or they can do things that are very bad against humans, against human rights. And you have to, if you are a journalist or a political scientist or a professor, you have to say the truth. So maybe they change their ways of behavior. Yes, they are criticizing everyone that it's not from a right-wing ideology. And this right-wing is similar to fascism and Nazism. They are saying, for example, to liberal Jews or to socialist Jews that they are anti-Semites. The Nazi regime in Germany of Hitler accused the Jews to be or capitalist exploiters or communist propagandists. So the Israel regime now is trying to do the same thing to Jews that they are liberal. They accuse that they are capitalist and they sell by money and greed and all these things. And if they are socialists, they say that they are communists, like it still used to be the Soviet Union. That is the case of a liberal Jew named George Soros. He's an Hungarian from Hungary, a liberal Jew that is criticized to be an anti-Semite. Because he's a liberal Jew and the Hungary government is a friend with the Zionist state now, and they both are ultra right wings, and they are really the bad guys, and they are making guilty liberals or socialists.
On social media, the conversation took a different turn. King Benjamin says, if you're against funding for Israel, you're anti-Semitic. Kevin says, but of course, it's easier to cry anti-Semitism and try to slur Bet Eslam through guilt by association than address its substantive criticism, because the report's analysis and conclusions are careful, sober, and convincing. Jesse says, yes, it is totally absurd. Israel is an awful apartheid entity. 100% agree about the irony in it all. I always say it's not anti-Semitic to be anti-Israel.
Well, of course, we get into the complexity of the overlap between anti-Semitism and anti-Zionism. Zionism is a term, an ideological term that emerges from the late 1800s. Theodore Herzl began a process where there was a lobbying, an effort to create a Jewish state in the Middle East. That is what Zionism is. And Zionism, of course, there's a range of Zionist interpretations and manifestations of that ideology, going from labor Zionism to revisionist Zionism on the right wing. There are many Jewish people from the beginning of Zionism who were hostile towards Zionism, who thought that it was wrong to associate their religion with a political movement. And there are still many Jews, especially Orthodox Jews and rabbis in Israel, who think it's wrong to use the Jewish religion as a basis for the creation of a Jewish state. So there are secular critics of Zionism as well, Jewish voices for peace in the United States, independent Jewish voices here in Canada. And these are Jewish people who are critical of Zionism and are critical of the treatment by the Israeli government, especially of Palestinian Arabs, and the torture and maltreatment and failure to recognize and indeed the tendency to crush the human rights of Palestinian people. And those Jewish critics very much resent being called anti-Semitic because they're Jewish. But of course, oftentimes the term self-hating Jews comes up, and this group can be condemned as self-hating Jews. So it's complex. Well, it may have been overused, but the power of the Israel lobby is such that there really isn't a lot of debate, say within the United States, say within Canada, say within Great Britain, about how the Israeli state abuses this term, anti-Semitism. It's kind of a dangerous ground to even criticize the Jewish state for abusing the term anti-Semitism. So this is a phenomena that sees, although it might be overused, there isn't a lot of tolerance for any real discussion of these issues. I look to my Canadian Parliament and I don't see the possibility of much discussion because all political parties are of a similar mind when it comes to Israel. They identify and support Israel in large measure. So this abuse of the term anti-Semitism, it comes out particularly in the way that the International Holocaust Remembrance Association definition of anti-Semitism is being adopted by many governments, by many municipalities, by many universities, by many labor unions. All kinds of agencies adopt this definition, which basically says that to criticize Israel is to be anti-Semitic, that any criticism of Israel can be interpreted as anti-Semitic. There should be much more debate on this, but the context seems to not be there. Well, anti-Semitism is a very ironic phrase. You could say that Semites don't include Ashkenazi Jews, for instance. I mean, Jewish people are genetically diverse. They have many backgrounds. They're not at the moment Jewish people. It's not a particularly missionary religion, but it has been in the past a missionary religion, and Ashkenazi Jews derived from people who were converts to Judaism. And so ironically, Ashkenazi Jews tend to have an elite role within Israel, an elite role within the Jewish community collectively, and this group of people who are not Semites use their power against people who are Semites, including the Palestinians and other Arabs. So that's a great irony of the term.
It seems that the burden that Israel has imposed on all those who are criticizing it has backfired. Israel seems to use anti-Semitic as a weapon, but that weapon has backfired as it has been overused and exhausted. And now Israel's adversaries, who are Jewish and Israeli, are becoming victims of Israel's anti-Semitic slander. This same slander of other people who do not agree with Israel has exposed Israel for what many believe is anti-Semitic in nature. Ultra-Orthodox Jews accuse the ruling white European Jewish secular class in Israel as stealing their identity and their name. According to ultra-Orthodox Jews, elite European secular Zionist white Jews at the turn of the 19th century absorbed the attitudes of anti-Semites in Europe and looked at the real Jews themselves with the same disgust and loathing that the anti-Semites did.
From me and the production team here at Inside Israel, it's goodbye for now.
ارزش ها و صفاتی که انسان احترام میگذاره همه این ارزش ها در علی ابن ابی طالب جمعه
Human in general whether a Muslim, non-Muslim, or even a disbeliever, respect the values present in the character of Ali ibn Abi Talib.
لا يقيم أمر الله سبحانه إلا من لا يصانع ولا يضارع ولا يتبع المطامع.
Imam Ali عليه الصلاة والسلام, the reason we love him as our hero, or not only in the material sense, in the spiritual sense, in the leadership sense.
Assalamu alaikum, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio. The program's To My Brother, and I'm your host, Mahdi. We're talking about the universal persona of Imam Ali alayhi salam. Please stay with us. Imam Ali alayhi salam, the most distinguished and extraordinary personality in Islam after the Holy Prophet Muhammad. His entire life is a struggle for the advancement of Islam, the universal religion prescribed by Allah for all of humanity. Imam Ali alayhi salam was the living miracle raised up by the Holy Prophet Muhammad himself, and was not only the successor and the executor of the Holy Prophet Muhammad, but as history testifies, he was also a great human being, a brave defender of Islam, a just and fair judge, a generous philanthropist, a champion of the people, and the most pious person of his time.
قال أمير المؤمنين علي عليه السلام: ما قال الناس لشيء طوبى له إلا وقد خبأ له الدهر يوم سوء.
Imam Ali stated, "For everything to which people say, 'How good,' there is an evil hidden in this world." Welcome back, dear friends. It's great to have you with us on the program. This is IRIB English Radio, the program's To My Brother, and we're discussing the universal persona of Imam Ali, the son of Abu Talib, alayhi salam. So one of the great lessons and interesting things which we learn from the universal persona of Imam Ali, alayhi salam, is the fact that we should be very careful in testing the afflictions of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. Meaning, don't incur upon yourself the wrath of Allah by testing divine punishments. So one day, Imam Ali alayhi salam was preaching a sermon on the pulpit on the mimbar. And while preaching the sermon on the mimbar, he says, "I am a servant of Allah and the brother of His Messenger. I have the honor of marrying the Lady of Paradise. I am the leader of the believers and the successor of the last prophet. No one can boast of it except me, and whoever has such a claim will be saddened by Allah the Almighty. While Imam Ali had said these things, a man from among the crowd, who was from the tribe of Abs, rose up and protested to what Imam Ali had said, and mockingly said to him, "Who is there who cannot have such a claim? I now say that I am the servant of Allah, and I am the brother of His Messenger, and see, I have not been afflicted with any distress." Hardly had the man finished his words when suddenly a strange insanity afflicted him, and he started trembling all over, up to the point that he had to be dragged out of the mosque by his feet. Allahu Akbar. Dear friends, a very profound and very scary lesson. We should never test the divine punishments. We should never test the divine wrath. For at any moment, it is possible that Allah inflicts us with something that we cannot save ourselves from. An excellent lesson for life and death, brought to us by the universal persona of Imam Ali alayhi salam.
IRIB English Radio. You can email us at englishradio@irib.ir.
تمام ارزش‌ها و صفاتی که انسان چه به عنوان انسان مؤمن به اسلام چه به عنوان انسان مؤمن به هر دینی
human in general whether a muslim non-muslim or even a disbeliever respect the values present in the character of Ali ibn Abi Talib this means Ali ibn Abi Talib is a global character who is respected by Sunnis, Shias, and even non-Muslims. Everyone, even the faithless people, respect Imam Ali and his personal values.
Ask you for the protection on the day when property will not avail, nor sons except he who comes with a heart free from evil.
وأسألك الأمان يوم يعض الظالم على يدي يقول يا ليتني اتخذت مع الرسول سبيلا.
And I ask you for protection on the day when the unjust one will bite his hands, saying, Oh, would that I had taken away with the messenger.
وأسألك الأمان يوم يعرف المجرمون بسيماهم فيؤخذ بالنواصي والأقدام.
And I ask you for protection on the day when the guilty shall be recognized by their marks. So they shall be seized by the forelocks and the feet. And I ask you for protection on the day when a father shall not give any satisfaction for his son, nor shall the child give any satisfaction for his father. Surely the promise of Allah is true.
Assalamu alaikum, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio. I'm Atta, the producer of the program To My Brother, and at this moment I invite you to listen to a short speech by Sheikh Fayyaz Jafar. I hope you enjoy it.
And when we go towards seeing the instruction of Imam Ali alayhi salatu wasalam toward Malik al-Ashtar, amongst the main themes and advices that he gives them in terms of being a leader, is telling him, Oh Malik, know that Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala is judging you by the way that you rule over your subjects, and that your subjects are being judged by their relationship with you. What's that supposed to mean? In Risalat al-Huquq of the Imam Zain al-Abidin alayhi salatu wasalam, he says something really similar. He states that it is the right of the leader to know that when he or she takes the position of leadership, that Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala is judging the leader by the way and by his dealings with the subjects. Every conversation that we have, every communication, every dealing in any circumstance, Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala is being vigilant over that relationship. But in the same way, if someone is acting unjustly, if someone in a position of leadership is not fulfilling their responsibilities toward their community, toward their society, then Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala is seeing the subject to see what sort of changes are they going to make. What sort of amr bil ma'ruf and nahy an al munkar are they going to perform? So Malik al-Ashtar is being advised by the Imam alayhi salatu wasalam, again, just to be really vigilant of every single one of his dealings.
Dear listeners, we hope you enjoyed this episode of To My Brother. Don't forget to visit our website at parstoday.com. We leave you in Allah's care. Bye for now.
What you heard was an IRIB English radio program. Our website is www.parstoday.com/en. This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.